The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
By the bell.
By the Bella?
I said...
Lock and load.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Well, I've lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-teeny stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Ding, 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 ding. We are saved by the Bella. How's it going, Bella?
Yes, saved by Bella. Yes, yes, saved. So I've saved so many things by me. And I don't like days off. I really don't. I don't like days off from work. I don't like days off from the radio show. As I've always said, and anybody that really knows me, don't let me have idle time. Don't let me have downtime. I find trouble, and I don't need to. I don't need to. I cause enough trouble all on my own, just doing the thing that I love the most, which is going to my rigs. And I
and
love
eating
my
chocolate.
Huh?
And eating chocolate?
I'm not even a chocolate. No, you know what? I'm not a chocolate fan, but you were talking about hummus before we came on air. I'm the opposite. I love hummus. I love pico de gallo, the real stuff with tortilla chips and real homemade guacamole. Now that I will take any day.
Oh, I like a good spicy hummus, and I do like good quality chocolate on occasion. And it's amazing what just a little bite of a good, dark, and I hate to say it, usually European because it's less sweet, chocolate does, but can't eat more than a bite or two.
Especially hey, now there I'll agree with you. Now that I do like, a little bite, and my company men, and by the way, I have missed my rigs. I am not in Williston right now, and I can't wait to get back home. And you know what? When I said that today, it came out, and I didn't even think twice. And you know, I have not called home somewhere in so long. And I tried flying out early today. I tried flying out early. I was going to pay the penalty. Just get me back there. Get me to my rigs. Get me back to my home. And I couldn't do it. They didn't have the flight, which would have meant I would have interrupted the show one more night. And I don't like being away from the show. We left off last Wednesday. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was talking to Chad's dad, and I was showing him the stats this morning. And we're going to break a record for last Wednesday's show. So anybody new listening tonight, anybody listening that didn't hear February 13th show last Wednesday, you got to tune in and hear what you missed and hear what everybody else is tuning in and playing. Because if so far we're over 800, which is the largest listenership to a single show, and we want to hit 1,000 plays every show. Just to start, that's like the baseline, because then we're headed to 10,000, 20,000, and then on to, you know, the syndication and Sirius and the rest of it, because I'm after it. We're getting there. We're going to hit it, James.
We
I know
do.
We are.
We got big plans. Our app, Chad and I were perusing the app today and kind of working on some of the logos for it, kind of making sure it's all color coordinated with the website, and I'm looking forward to it, and it kind of spawned a little idea that I pushed his way for maybe an app independent of the show that we might develop, you know, so I love stuff like that. But so tell the people where you are. You're in crazy where? Hello?
Well, yeah, I'm in Colorado.
It probably never seemed so big of a town until after your life in Williston, I could imagine. I mean, similar to me coming here to Houston after living in Billings for 7 years, it was like, wow, I was raised in big city and now I'm back in big city, but it never seemed like it was so big.
Well, here's the difference. I'm from Minneapolis, and then I lived in Colorado. I came out. I was a ski bum for a while. I dated a ski bum who competed on the World Pro Mogul Tour. And then I came back out off and on while I was going to college, and I had my first sales job out here. And then, you know, I went back to Minneapolis and got into the corporate world, and then went out to Williston, as we all know, you know, did the bits, and then I have my business up there. And then when I come back here, and it's just like what I said a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was a couple of months ago, I don't know. But I don't want to leave the oil fields. I can't assimilate back into outside of the oil fields. I just don't fit in. And then when I got picked up at the airport, and then, you know, I looked down and I got my steel toe boots on, which I was wearing up,
the high heeled ones, right? The 6-inch pump steel toe boots, right?
Good Lord. Sure, to fulfill the ones that want to see the fantasy picture of me in these, you know, the stilettos.
They still have the Vibram sole because you don't want to slide up there in all the mud and muck, but
well,
still steel toes.
Look, when I left Williston on today's Tuesday. Good grief. Wednesday.
All day.
Tuesday. Get it. Got it. Great. Okay, when I left Williston yesterday morning, it was a blizzard. And, you know, I took the diesel. I could have took the Chevy, but I took the diesel because it handles much better and I have brand new tires on it. It's a 3/4 ton. It's much heavier. I mean, it was glare ice, a whiteout. And sure, I had my clothes that you can wear outside of the oil field, my suit and my boots and whatnot, but I'm not going to dress like that. I didn't know if I was going to end up pulling somebody out. I don't go into the ditch, but I might have needed to lend a helping hand, which I didn't, but I got to Minot, and then my plane was delayed, and then I flew into Denver, and then that plane was delayed, and then I flew into Eagle, Colorado, Eagle/Vail, and it was cool, though, on the flight from Minot to Denver, there was a woman across from me, and as we were waiting to unload, and she happened to look down at the boots, and I just said, I said I work in the oil field, to answer the question right away. Nobody else had steel toes on, and she said, really? And I said, yeah. And she said, what do you do? And I said, I have my own business. And she said, well, it's the hot spot. It's the hot spot of the country right now. And I said, it really is. And she said, you know, what is your business? And I said, well, I have a cleaning crew, and they clean the living quarters up at the rigs. And she said, wow. And I said, you know what? I love it. I absolutely love it. And I said, I hate to be away from it, but I've got some business to take care of. And she said, well, that's fabulous. I haven't met. And I said, no, you haven't met a woman that is up in the oil field by herself. And I said, but you did today. And she said, you go, girl. And then last night, so I get a phone call. I've got so much fun ahead of me. I get a phone call by these producers. They're independent filmmakers. And they are meeting me up there on Thursday, and they're riding around with me in the truck, in the diesel. They're going to go to the rig that we're cleaning because I've got a rig move every day through Sunday, and then more next week as well. But they want to ride with me. They want to go up to the rig. They want to film or take pictures of the girls cleaning and then get the experience of what it's like to spend a day with me just doing what I do, which it's not a job. It's what I love to do. And I didn't tell them
don't
just how
the
much
Army.
Fun.
Don't join the Marines. Join Bella. It's the Bo D'Angelo adventure.
I didn't tell them just how much fun they were going to have. I'll let that be the surprise because, you know, until you hang out with me. And so Amy, who's doing the next write-up in the paper, so I'm going to be written up in four more papers and then the drill. And then Amy has spent a couple of weeks with me, and she was so sweet. She sent me a text the other day, and she said, oh, I'm in the office. I had to do this and that. She goes, but I'd rather be riding around with you today. I had so much fun with you. And I said, well, thank you. I mean, what is more fun than driving around and bopping into the rig, visiting with my company men, listening to tunes cranked all the way up, and you know, just driving around. I mean, it's not a job. It's what I love. And like I said, I miss it. I can't wait to get back tomorrow.
So you'll be there tomorrow.
I will be there tomorrow. So the guys, I told Amy, I said, let the guys know on Thursday that when we get back in, I've got to do the show. And I said, you know, let them, maybe they should call in, you know, since they just spent the day, and then they can talk about why they're out there, talk about their concept of the movie, and give a little preview. Because I said, so the whole state basically knows how much attention, because everybody has been hearing about all the producers wanting to come out and do the reality show, all the way from the TNA Hollywood version, which none of us want, to the real documentary, which I interviewed a couple weeks ago with Big Fish Productions about doing an actual documentary. So there's four different groups that I'm talking to right now. So one way or another, I'm going to be on TV.
Cool. And you're not going to be blonde. You're going to be you, which will be nice to kind of get, you know, dispel that myth of she looks like Farrah Fawcett. One shot.
Oh, you know, and no, but here's the thing. And I got cranky the other day because when I posted those pictures, you know, many people, and I was talking to you that night because I said, listen to what this one's saying. How many different hair colors can I mean, every woman colors their hair. I've been jet black. I've been platinum blonde. I've been completely like, who's the platinum blonde that I'm thinking of? Doesn't matter. But I've messed around with every hair color they're known. And I can put on a suit like today. I can put on something frilly and like in that picture. I just never thought that I would get to the point that there would be so much. But Wilson called it from day one. He said, you're never going to hear the end of that picture of you. And, well, now we have the other side of me that you see. But remember, when I was back in the corporate world and I lived in suits, people would have had the same reaction if they saw a picture of me in Carhartt and steel-toe boots. See, when you're if you're used to seeing me walk in with the hairstyle different, and I never wore my hair up in a ponytail every day in the corporate world, but when you're out in the wind, the sand, the dust, when you're up at a rig, when you're around, I mean, certainly if you go up on the rig floor, you don't want your hair all over the place. There's moving parts. I mean, it's a safety thing. It's also, it's just plainly
high and tight.
Well, and you know, especially in the summer with all that Scorio dust, I mean, my hair, I can come back in, and it just feels like it's just crunchy from taking everything in. So, you know, no different when I was back in my corporate job for 10 years, they would have looked at, you would have shown them a picture in the Carhartt and different hairdo, they would have said, well, what is this? So, but you know what? That's the beauty of living a full life and having all these different experiences. And like I always said, when I interviewed the first time for the bit job, when I was told that I could throw away the corporate suit, I could get rid of the high heels, I didn't have to deal with the corporate BS and kissing up and all those games, I could curse and I could talk politics and I could speak my mind and find like-minded people, I found heaven. And you cannot take me away. That is where my family is. And my other family is this radio show. And we're all going together as the family grows on the radio show, as my family back home is waiting for me, that, you know, they go hand in hand. I mean, without my business, I don't have the radio show, and without the radio show, they're intertwined because the life spills into both of them and has built. And I mean, I love my company men. I love them. I love them to pieces. And
but
you know, they really.
These guys are so shocked. The guys are so shocked about the hair color. I kind of laugh because I was in Walmart the other day, and I'm walking by the first row. Then I'm walking by the second row and third, and there was four rows of hair dye for women. I don't know, maybe one whole roll of blonde, another one of redhead. I mean, it was amazing how much hair colors. And for them to sit here and say that they're shocked you're not blonde, it's like, go to Walmart. Figure it out, guys.
Well, here, you know, I, in all reality, and I know this because I've been compared to someone for a very long time, and everybody had her poster at some point in their bedroom, and I didn't really think I was going to get the reaction, I mean, it's certainly a compliment. It's a curse, and it's also a gift all at the same time.
Yeah.
And I wish that I would have put the Carhartt picture to begin with, because what it did to the radio show was, for the first year and some 9 months, how many times did I come to Chad Lang and say, I'm tired of the show being hijacked. I'm tired of people not taking me seriously. I'm tired of questions like, so, are you up at the rig in a pink miniskirt? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
and I'm sitting there smacking gum and talking about ridiculous things with big hooters out and, you know, just blabbering on, and they don't take me seriously whatsoever. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, that's why I just, when we all got together this time with this team, I mean, look at the growth of the show. Look at the level of guests that we have coming on, the new image on the website. And the website is Bella, B-E-L-L-A, D'Angelo, D-A-N-G-E-L-O.com. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can read all of our bios, who we are, where we came from, what we're about. You'll see the pictures. You'll see the guest lineup.
Email addresses?
Our email addresses. You can contact us. You can see the...
No. Do we sell their email addresses? Do we share any of that information with anyone? No. No.
No.
So people know that if you sign up, it will not go anywhere. In fact, we do not have direct visible access to it. It's all encrypted and safely stored. So the government will not know.
And anybody that knows me goes, for the love of God, we all know she can barely operate her own website. So we know that no matter what we do, she wouldn't even know how to get to it, even if we told her how. She can't even open a document and save it, and I certainly can't follow directions or even do the tutorial. So I was up at the rig the day before I left, the day before I flew out. I went up to basically the border of Canada, and I went and visited with my one company man who I hadn't met before. And we were cleaning all the shacks because it was rig move day, and it was blowing hard. This was Sunday, and I mean, it was windier than hell up there. But it was Sunday afternoon, and I came in and I sat down and I said, are you busy? And he said, no, but I'm going to be. And I said, okay. So I just sat down, and I, you know, typical me, I just started blabbing on. I don't even really remember what all. All I know is that, you know, every time I sit down with these guys, it's as if I've known them for a long time, and we're sitting listening to old country music in the background and watching as they're you know, getting rigged up. My girls are down there cleaning, and then I told the story of how my business started, which we all thank Uncle Fetzer for that evening that the guys were so inventive, because I don't go out to the bars in Williston. I don't go out, period. I, you know, by the time I get home from work and then get done with the show, you know, it's good that I take a hot shower and I hop in bed and do some computer work, talk on Facebook, line up guests, because back then I did everything. I mean, I was scheduling the shows, I was getting the guests, and I was running the switchboard, and then the show was 3 hours long, sometimes 3.5. I mean,
Now I just text your staff, oh, James, get this, oh, James.
We're all a team, and we're very, James is responsible for the new image of the website. He's done a beautiful, you've done a beautiful, beautiful job,
and
the technology that you bring, because if you look at the group of us, that was our biggest shortcoming, and, you know, it's not easy to find somebody with as much technical savvy as you bring. That is, although I still think you might have done something to the laptop, because you don't like Windows 8. I don't either. So I don't know. I'm thinking maybe you said, I'm going to do something to put a snail in there, because she attempted to throw it out the window and run it over with the diesel, which I still might do when I get home.
It's your call. It's your call. Hey, you know, we were going to start a new segment on Tuesdays that we might as well hop right into for just a few quick moments.
I'll let you do that one second, though, because I got to wrap this thing up really quick. So give me a couple more minutes. So sitting there with this company man, listening to the old-time country music, and told him about how the business got started. Well, he started roughnecking. And this gives you an idea how much the oil field has changed. And this is what, when these producers, when I pick the one and they pick me and we have the team to go do this, I want the real story told. And as I have said to so many people, I was picked as Bella of the Bakken when I was on KTGO AM 1090, which broadcasts out of Tioga, North Dakota. I was on a regular radio show for 6 months. And, you know, I see myself as the face and voice of the Bakken, and I want the real genuine story to come out of what the oil fields, you know, these families grew up there. They grew up in the oil industry. They grew up, you know, this gentleman started roughnecking at 16. He just needed a note from his parents. No hard hat was required. And he started out in Worms Corner is what they called it. Now they call it just the corner. They don't get to call them worms. But that's where he started. And then the rest of the people, the rest of the company men that I've earned their business, they all know each other. It's been one big network, and they all grew up, as they say, breaking each other out. And, you know, we just had one of those afternoons, and I just thanked him as I said that I had to head out, and I told him to listen to the show, and I said, you'll get to hear about my afternoon with you today. And I told him I would come back to see him when I get back, because on Monday nights I have committed to being able to describe the drilling process. And I've talked about the surface drill, the vertical, the curve. I'm into the lateral next Monday. Last night we were off for several different reasons, but then I drew the drilling screen, which is where you read all of the everything that's going on at the rig. Well, he is going to make notes for me and help me best understand, so that just like when I started selling drill bits, I didn't understand that drill screen. I know pieces of it, but that's what I'm going to explain next Monday. So I'll be back to see him before he goes on days off. Well, then I jumped up to the next rig. And, James, you posted the difference between an assault rifle and a rifle, R15 and M16. That came from my company man. I sent you some pictures from a rig move. That came from that company man. And when I bounced into his rig, he said, wow. He said, I didn't expect a woman today. Let me go tidy up the place today. And then he said, and he goes, maybe I should flush the toilet. And I said, oh, okay, don't worry. I've been around these places before. And he said, but I haven't been baking all day. So he gave me a piece of chocolate cake with German chocolate frosting. And then I looked at the Payson guy and I said, I need the internet, because I wanted to show him what was going on with the show. I wanted to show the company man that some of the things that he sent me were up on the website. Well, anyways, I didn't. He had to close it down because they were moving the rig, and so then he told me the pacing guy said that he had listened to the show while he was driving, and I thought, you know, I mean, it's really working. I'm not having to be so threatening anymore, and these guys are much more willingly tuning in and listening. And so then I got talking about Williston and where did he live and where I live. That's when the company man said, you know what, he does not need to hear about the Seven Dwarfs. He said, however, it was kind of interesting. Maybe you want to talk about the 10-time convicted. And I looked at him, and he said, well, I'm just saying, I mean, he was a kidnapper and he was a rapist. And he said, those two combined, how is it you still didn't get lucky? And I didn't even expect that one. And I just looked at him, he goes, I don't know, I'm just saying, being a rapist means he likes it. You were down the hall. I don't know, call me crazy. And I said, you know, I don't have time for the madness. I don't.
He didn't have
and
a poster.
Huh?
He didn't have a poster as a kid.
But in all seriousness, I don't have time. I barely have extra time as it is to even, I mean, James, you've tasked me with all these things that I'm supposed to get done. I don't even get those done. And like I'm building an empire. I mean, I have goals for the business, which is Isabella's Oilfield Services, and I wouldn't have the business if it weren't for my company men. I've got goals. I've got a great team. This radio show, we want to get some, you know, the biggest listenership was last Wednesday. We want every night to be like that. We want to build a store online. I've got all kinds of things. So I don't have time for anything other than my business and the radio show. And then
I want to start in on that new segment that we were talking
about. I know. I'm getting to it. I've got to give you the lead in. And jeez. There is a method to my madness, even though last night as the gentleman that I'm out here with, you know, and I said, do you still need my laptop tonight? And he goes, no. He said, that's fine. I've had quite enough of Bella today. And I said, are you sure? I said, and then he goes, you know what? I will one day get to say I spent time with Bella D'Angelo and before she, you know, really started kicking the crap out of Hannity. And I said, yeah. And then they'll say, what was it like spending 3 full days with her? And then I'll say, no, I can answer that for you. Yeah, go figure. I'll answer his question that I ask of him. And I said, you'll say, then I went and had peace and quiet for 7 days and my ears finally, you know, they weren't so bruised anymore. It was peaceful. It was tranquil because as my company man, Mississippi One, said, do you ever stop talking, and is there anything you won't say? No and no. But we are going to start breaking it up, and we are going to start adding more different segments so that it's not just 2 hours of one guest taking kind of the lead. And we're gonna add segments. And if you have ideas of segments you would like us to add, let us know. So, James, introduce what you're going to start bringing in on Tuesday.
Okay. I figure for the next 33 weeks, I was going to bring up a politically incorrect topic, specifically based on Thomas Wood's book, 33 Questions About American History You're Not Supposed to Ask. Read this book, great book, but I kind of felt it was something good to just kind of start in and discuss. So we're going to start with a little bit now, and we'll come back to it through the show. But specifically, today's topic is, did the Founding Fathers support immigration? What do you think, Bella? Did they?
And you do see that call is in queue, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay,
we'll get
cool.
them here in a minute.
Not only did they not... And you know, this is what we were talking about this last night, and I have been hammering in on amnesty, and it was the first thing that when I went on Sean Hannity's radio show for the very first time, and I have the MP3 file, and I would love to play parts of it, James, because this was the exact topic that I said to him, and I wanted him to understand from an economic viewpoint of manufacturing and our economy. It's not about making illegal legal, and it's not about an understanding of immigration. We need to understand it and embrace them and love them. Back in the day when immigration was meant because they were coming to America because they love this country and they wanted to live the American dream, because now they are not coming to this country to assimilate. They are coming into this country to rape and pillage and to become part of the entitled group that builds that continues to build the base for the progressive liberals. That is the whole point of it.
I think you're right. It depends on which door they're coming through. But, you know, the polls consistently find that Americans believe that the immigration levels need to be reduced. It's often assumed falsely that the right of immigration is a hallowed American principle. You know, the founding fathers were generally cautious about the immigration. They didn't wish to exclude it altogether, but in no way did they desire to ever encourage it. And we're actually going to touch on this two more times in deeper segments further on in the show. But right now we have our guest on the air, and I want to introduce him. Clint Stutz has pulled together a group down here in Texas who've worked on the nullification of Obamacare bill, or what I like to say, Obama doesn't care. And Clint is a grassroots activist. He's active in, I believe, We Texans and several other groups around the area. And he also is a business owner of Go-Kart Galaxy. So for those of you go-karts owners out there, if you need parts for your go-kart, that's the site to go to. And let's just go ahead and bring Clint on. Clint, how's it going this evening?
Oh, pretty good, James.
Pretty good. Well, why don't you tell us how you came about your interest in this bill and where it's at?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to truncate it a little bit. I was very involved in the Texas Republican Convention this last go-round, organizing for that beforehand. You know, we spent 2 or 3 or 4 months, you know, trying to get the right people to show up so we could make a positive change in the Texas Republican Party. And we did have some measure of success. And after that effort, I was completely burned out, because not only was I doing that, but at the same time, I was campaigning hard for a guy named T.J. Fabby in House District 10. We were trying to unseat a 20-year incumbent, and we failed, but it was a valiant effort. But we, you know, worked our butts off on that campaign, and at the same time tried to gear up for the state convention. So by the time the convention was over, I was completely burned out. I didn't want to think about politics or reading anything political. So that meant staying off Facebook, of course. But so I vowed right after the convention, which was, I think it was the beginning part of June, mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to do anything political until after the November election. I'm through. I'm sick of this. I quit. A month later. A month later.
I held out for 4 weeks.
Yeah, 4 whole weeks, and what happened was, see, I was the program director for the Cedar Creek Lake Tea Party, and I was so burned out, I was just kind of, you know, like, oh, man, I don't want to do anything, but I have to come up with a program for this month's meeting, and so I thought, well, you know what, Obamacare is going to rear its ugly head in a big way come 2013, why don't we try to get something going on nullification of Obamacare? And I was a big nullification proponent during Deborah Medina's campaign for governor back in 2010. I mean, that was the cornerstone of her campaign, was nullification and her position, and that was the answer to federal tyranny. So I thought, okay, well, let me just go to the Tenth Amendment Center's website. And, you know, I knew they had a, you know, just a boilerplate bill that was always up there you could print out.
Yeah, I saw it coming for us.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, the boilerplate bill was enough to do what we wanted to do. And a couple weeks later, after I'd already gotten this thing started, I was like, well, wait a second. If you read closer, it really doesn't do anything. It doesn't establish policy. It just says it's nullified in Texas, and if someone tries to enforce it, there's penalties.
So essentially, the boilerplate bill was a glorified resolution, wouldn't you say? I mean, it was like the legislature, a legislature that would have passed it essentially was saying, yeah, it's nullified here, but what does that mean? How does it play out? How do we protect the people?
It didn't give any details, and I think they leave it that way on the Tenth Amendment Center's website because they can't tailor a bill for each state. They probably mean that to be a starting point for you. But what has played out is that all these states that have either passed or introduced nullification of Obamacare legislation, it's been something that is either word for word what their bill was, or they've changed a little bit here and there, but not much. But nobody's added any policy to actually fight against the provisions of Obamacare. I mean, you can say it's null and void all you want, but you have to have a policy in place that actually interposes against Obamacare.
So
you have to have something that you're actually arguing about other than just saying no.
Yeah. You got to say no, and you say no, and here's what we're going to do in response to what you're doing.
So tell us about the teeth of your bill. Or at least
the teeth of our bill. Now, let me preface this by saying that we, and James, you were a part of this group.
Yes.
there was about seven or eight of us that were consistently on these conference calls every Sunday night for, three or four months, you think?
Yeah, about that.
We spent sometimes an hour and a half on a Sunday night on a conference call trying to figure out what in the world we could do, what kind of policy we could come up with that would interpose against Obamacare. And it became pretty apparent to us early on that it was going to be really hard. And what we finally came up with was something that was going to interpose against the taxing portion of Obamacare. There's a lot that Obamacare does, but there's only so much that we can actually formulate a policy against at this point because the states have been so neutered over the decades that the federal government is so intertwined in our business that we can't even begin to interpose against some portions of it. So we chose the taxing portion because we did see a way out in that. And the policy we established in our bill when we turned it in to be written and drafted by the Legislative Council here in Texas was to force the IRS to go through the Secretary of State's office whenever they pursue someone for not paying a federal income tax. And the thought process behind that is this. When you don't pay a federal income tax and the IRS sends you nasty letters, they'll send you a few letters, then they'll start coming after you. They'll try to file a lien. And a lien has to go through some office or agency in Texas. And in Chapter 14 of the Texas Property Code, it actually tells the IRS how they have to file a lien in Texas. And it's actually, I'll read the title of the chapter. It says, Uniform Federal Lien Registration Act. It tells them what they have to do and where they have to go to register a lien. And unless they go through that process, it's not a registered lien, and it does not count against the taxpayer. And what we thought we would do is, number one, amend Chapter 14 to add some more teeth in there to say, well, if you don't follow these procedures, then your lien is null and void. And the procedure is if a taxpayer, let's say, James, that you file your taxes in 2013, and you owe X amount of dollars for Obamacare taxes, let's say $1,000 just for the heck of it. Your total tax bill that year was $2,000. So you say, okay, well, I'm not going to pay $1,000 of it. I'm just going to send them a check for $1,000. Well, you get the nasty letters from the IRS, and they start pursuing you, and they finally get to the point where they're going to file a lien. Well, they have to follow our law in Texas regarding how you register a lien. And our bill says, well, James didn't pay $1,000 of his Obamacare taxes. So the IRS comes to the Secretary of State and says, we're trying to pursue this person for this tax, and we're seeking your approval per your law. Secretary of State says, well, we nullified Obamacare in Texas. If you're trying to collect Obamacare taxes, you're out of luck. And if you're trying to collect anything else that is a lawful tax, we'll let you collect that. But if it's related to Obamacare, you're out of luck. So if they get denied by the Secretary of State, at that point, they don't have authorization to go file a lien anywhere in Texas. And if they try to sidestep that process, they are liable, or they are criminally liable for circumventing our law. And that's where the Class B misdemeanor comes in, and jail time and a fine. So it's basically a blocking mechanism.
And I'm sorry, I had some technical difficulties and got disconnected, so I missed part of what you had said. If I remember right, we did also draft a method for the government to go through in order to have legal access to recovery of unpaid taxes that were not related to Obama doesn't care. True?
Yeah, if the taxes that the IRS is trying to pursue the taxpayer for are lawful taxes, they will be allowed to file a lien for those and file levies and execute levies up to the amount of those taxes owed. But nothing related to Obamacare will be allowed to be collected in Texas.
Yeah. So we kind of felt it important to really isolate the Obamacare or Obama doesn't care, but yet we did realize that we couldn't, as much as many of us would have probably have loved to, told the IRS you've got to keep your hands off everything. The reality is you know, pay unto Caesar what is his. And we kind of took that approach. And we actually had several different approaches, some not so constitutional by someone that kind of thinks of themselves as more constitutional. You want to discuss a little bit of those challenges we had reining everyone in? And that particular person I'm referring to is me. It was pointed out that one of my ideas.
Me too, though.
Yeah.
My initial idea was unconstitutional. I was so heartbroken because I realized it, and it was obvious, but it just kind of flew over my head at the time. But I'll let you explain your idea because I've forgotten half of it. Then I'll explain mine that was unconstitutional. So you go ahead first.
The gist of my idea was that all funds would route through the state treasury before being paid to the federal government. And there's a little bit more in my concept besides Obamacare, but essentially it would just be routed through the state. And what was justly due the feds would go directly to the feds. But if there was something that was for Obamacare, that would be set aside. It wouldn't be paid to the feds. It would eventually get routed back to the citizen, and it would be protected, but it would be shown in that transfer. And part of my thought was for other areas of what we pay the federal government is, let's say we decided we were going to turn down the educational money that we receive or other funds, and therefore we were going to take this on as a state. Well, that percentage of that tax ultimately really shouldn't go to the government because we're not paying or we're not receiving the educational funds, and why should we pay into it? The government, the Congress, does have the right to collect taxes, require and collect taxes, and we would have been directly in violation of the Constitution and that right, even if it was for what we believe to be an unconstitutional tax.
And that's pretty much the same plan that I think I had latched on to yours, and I was so excited, and then Tom Glass burst our bubble. I think I actually missed that conference call that night, but I listened to the recording, and I was like, oh, no, Tom's right. We can't do this.
Yeah. And you're so right. One of the things I loved about the environment in which this bill was drafted, and I kind of got less involved the further on it when I just got busy in life, was we had – I think it was more like 14 people at one time or another giving input to this bill. So it wasn't just any one person, except you, that took the lead. It wasn't just any one person voicing in, and it really, I think, went to epitomize what good legislation, or how good legislation is supposed to come about. It's not just one person saying, I'm going to pass this law, but it's discussion, it's debate, it's tearing apart ideas, and all of which we did. And, you know, even though, like my idea, Tom came and said, well, that's unconstitutional, and it was blatantly obvious to him. I guess I was so enamored with my bill, maybe, for lack of a better word, that I never saw it from the point that was so obvious as soon as he mentioned it.
Yeah, and I think early on we did have people like 14 or 16 people on, and then it kind of dwindled down to the 7 or 8 that would consistently show up for it, and we had great discussions, and we hammered out a plan. The first plan that was actually constitutional was the one we set up where we were going to make county adjudication boards that would kind of work like the property tax appraisal board in your county, where you would go and the IRS would have to come there to collect whatever taxes that they say you owe them, but the adjudication board would say, oh, wait, this is an Obamacare tax, you can't collect this. Mm-hmm. And so that was our idea up to a point. And then we had one conference call where we had a bunch of folks up in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area get on, because I had gone to speak at the Fort Worth 912 group up there. I had a speech on nullification up there. They got really riled up and all excited. And that next conference call, we had probably 40 or 45 people on the line. And out of that group, after that whole conversation was over, that took about 2 hours, I think, about 4 or 5 or 6 of those new people that were on the line, they wanted to get together and discuss our plan further in the middle of that next week. And one of those people was a guy named Barry Schleck. He's an activist up there in the Metroplex area. Pastor Stephan Broden, who ran against I forget what her name was up there in that area. He ran for Congress and lost, unfortunately. And Robert and Ross Kessig, they were on this call with us. And Barry was the one that said, well, why do we have to do this county adjudication board? Seems like a lot of bureaucracy. When all we really
I was laughing about that, because I was thinking the same thing, but Tom had some great reason for it, I think, because, you know, partially thinking that the county is your smallest, largest, government, but anyway, so go on.
And, you know, I got on that call with those few guys that evening thinking, well, I need to defend our bill because we worked hard on this, and I'm proud of what we've done. It may not be perfect, but I think it's a good bill. So we'd spend all this time on that, and Barry gets up and says, I don't think we have to have this county adjudication board. This is really all just a paperwork thing, isn't it? And I wanted to protest for a second, but and there was kind of an awkward silence on the phone while I was thinking this through. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think we should think about this some more. I think you have a point, Barry. And before that call was over, I was convinced that Barry was correct, that it was simply a paperwork thing that could be taken care of at the Secretary of State's office. It's when they just check a few boxes and, you know, okay, IRS, you can't do this or you can do this, and that's all it was. So,
and if I remember right, the IRS would still have to prove they have, you know, any citizen is innocent until proven guilty. So that same concept comes to play here, is the IRS would have to prove that the taxes that they are attempting to collect are in fact owed and are not related to Obama Doesn't Care.
Yes. They would have to actually itemize each tax owed and the amount owed. Otherwise, I mean, there's no go. They can't pass go, can't collect $300, you know. So that detail is in there, and it was really refreshing because we had our group of 8 people for so long, and we got tunnel vision, I think. And we did good work. We did great work. We came up with most of that plan that was workable. And then a few guys from one particular area, one says, hey, what about this? And the whole thing changes. That's what the grassroots is all about, man. You listen to each other. You don't bite each other's heads off. You listen. You gather information from each other, and you come up with the best plan. And I've never met probably half these people in person. I've met Teresa. I've met you. I've met Daniel. But the rest of the folks, I think I met Tom. But the rest of the folks that we've been on the phone with, I've never met in person, ever. And probably won't, unless we meet down in Austin for some kind of protest or something. But
you made an excellent point, you know, the grassroots compared to so many other organizations. You're absolutely right. It's not about biting anybody's heads off. And it's all about, you know, we're all a collective group here. And first of all, I want to say I'm very honored to have you on the show tonight, so thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, I look at it this way. You know, all of us have all gotten involved, whereas 4 or 5 years ago, did we ever think that we would be as involved and caring citizens fighting to take back this country and doing the things that we are doing? And the greatest thing is that the grassroots effort, that is what is bringing out the real patriots in this country, the doers, the ones that are staying off of, just as I always say, you know, you can be as mad as you want and do all the posting on Facebook, but so many of those are the like-minded, and we're trying to reach those that typically, and that's the goal of this show, is reaching those that typically don't tune in, the silent majority, those that are on the fence, those that don't typically listen to conservative radio. That's why this is a different show, a different voice, and trying to, and you know, this is an international show. We have those across the pond that listen on a regular basis, that post for us and spread the word. As a matter of fact, one of my very close and dear friends sent a message on my Facebook page speaking directly about, when we were talking earlier today about immigration, you know, Obamacare. I have been trying to get people to understand, and we were just talking about this last night with the gentleman that I'm out here in Colorado with. You know, when I tried to get people to understand what the anointed health care plan meant, back 4 years ago when unemployment was still very high, people were losing their benefits. To them, government-run health care seemed like a great idea because it was more than what they had, and it seemed better than what they were dealing with, because the health care system is broken to begin with. It needs to be taken apart, and it needs a fix. However, having our current administration, and I always say, it's bankrupt to begin with. And I'm up in North Dakota. We're fighting it very, very hard. And I just don't even see how they're going to even implement it when they don't even have the money behind it. And it is really, at this point, right now, it's just a revenue generator through taxation.
Yeah, and you're bringing up the money side of it, and that's kind of the point. Not only was the taxation the only thing we could really attack with a policy, it was the best thing to attack because it starves the beast. And
yep.
If our bill is in any way successful, and I really don't know what kind of chance it has in this legislature. The Texas legislature only meets once every 2 years for 140 days, and I don't know if we're going to get it this time. But I do know that the representative that's carrying the bill right now, he is fully committed to it, and if it doesn't get passed this session, he is not giving up. I mean, number one, we're going to have a bill that we can use next time. Number two, he might try a different strategy for getting it passed. There's sometimes you have to break up a bill into several bills and pass them, you know, separately to get what you want, and he's the kind of guy that's not going to give up, and he will pursue this because he knows that, you know, these are unprecedented times.
Yes,
the
they are.
The federal government has grown so large and has usurped so much power that the states have to fight back and take their rightful place as the master of the federal government. We created the federal government. It's not the other way around. I mean, 13 colonies or states ratified the Constitution and created a limited federal government with few delegated powers, and that's it. And the
and
rest of
powers
it
were clearly
to the states
defined,
or the people.
They were clearly defined and even strengthened with the Bill of Rights, which are not limiting the people, but is limiting the federal government.
Exactly. And when somebody who doesn't know anything about nullification asks me about it and says, well, what is it? I just say it's the fulfillment of the Tenth Amendment. Because if you read the Tenth Amendment, it's pretty straightforward. It either means what it says or it doesn't. The federal government is delegated certain few powers. And then the Tenth Amendment says that whatever's not delegated to the federal government and not prohibited to the states is reserved to the states or to the people. It's very straightforward.
And that would be great if we had an administration in place that adhered to the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. But, you know, we all know that the Constitution, in their eyes, is an old document that's to be dismissed. And it's being assaulted on a regular basis. That's what makes this administration so dangerous.
That's why your state legislatures are so important. That is, the state legislature is a lot easier to lobby than the national, the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's so much easier because it's right there in your state, and you have a better chance of knowing your I know two representatives personally, and you can't hardly say that about, you know, national congressmen.
Well, yeah.
Or senators. And just getting a word in with them is impossible.
Your state reps, even in a state like Texas, are so easy to access. I mean, I've been here a year and a half. I've probably met close to 20, 25, and I haven't really tried to. You know, they are accessible. They are reachable. And, you know, Clint, we started a new section talking about 33 questions in American history you're not supposed to ask. We're going to tie back in a few minutes. So, Bella, you know, we started talking about the Founding Fathers and immigration, and I probably need to clarify that we're talking about legal immigration. The Founding Fathers never supported the illegal entry into a foreign country except as an act of war, more commonly referred to as an invasion. Some of the Founding Fathers, Benjamin Franklin, often said some rather politically incorrect statements by today's standards, and here's just one. Why should Pennsylvania, founded by England, become a colony of aliens who will shortly be so numerous as to Germanize us instead of our Anglifying them, and will never adopt our language or customs any more than they can acquire our complexion? You know, essentially, he was saying that immigration of sufficient numbers and concentration could radically change the culture in ways that the Americans might not want, and this would happen in any country. Franklin was also not alone. Thomas Jefferson warned about the mass immigration in his notes on Virginia, and I'm sure this may be a surprise to some listeners. Are there no inconveniences to be thrown into the scale against the advantage expected by multiplication of numbers by importation of foreigners? It is the happiness of those united in society to harmonize as much as possible in matters which they must, of necessity, transact together. Essentially, Jefferson feared that foreigners would bring with them principles of governments that they left. You know, kind of like how Californians are commonly thought of today. They come into different states with their money, and they purchase their summer or winter homes, and eventually they want those California ways to become ways of rural Montana or North Dakota or wherever they're at.
Well, and that's what my point was when I said, and I'm going to pull both amnesty and Obamacare together, what, you know, what I had said was that none of us oppose legal immigration. And back in the day when those that immigrated to this country, they were coming here for the American dream. They were coming here for what America represented to the rest of the world, which is when we had the American dream, when you could come here and you could do what only exists in very small areas of this country right now, because the American dream has been squashed because entrepreneurialism and capitalism is a bad word. It is a negative connotation. You are not supposed to be a capitalist. You are not to be an entrepreneurial because you will be taxed to death, and that is not the American dream built by the administration. They talk about it, but they don't support it. And when you take amnesty, which it is, you know, now the immigrants come to this country with the entitlement. They believe that they are entitled to certain rights that they are given by the current administration, because that builds the voter base. And Obamacare is nothing more than something created to then take care of the entitlement society. And if you look at it, it is not a health care bill. For the love of God, you can get a sex change that is supposed to be paid for by us tax-paying individuals. And that's why the lunacy and the madness of this whole administration from day one and to where we are today with 3 years and 10 months left of it's insanity of what they are shoving down the 47% of the hardworking, tax-paying individuals that have to support the 53% of the entitlements. And if people take the time, and I've said this now, the what's going to happen now, because when you tried to explain to people what was going to happen, now it's hitting their paycheck. Mm-hmm. Now they're being asked the questions when they're going into their doctor about if they own arms. They're seeing the taxes coming out of their paychecks. They are now seeing the beginning of the effects of where Obamacare is starting to, at least the questions are being asked. You know, start asking your doctors the impact. Start asking them how they see it. How many people are going to leave the private practice? Ask those that are directly affected, those that are up into the ages where they have serious life-threatening things that they have to be taken care of, you know, cancer and other very serious life-threatening illnesses that they are facing. I give the perfect example of something as basic as bronchitis, which I get twice a year. It's especially worse now that I'm breathing all the scorio dust out in the oil fields. And, you know, the hoops that you're going to have to jump through, the time that it'll take you to get in. I mean, it is something that is so mind-boggling when you actually get into the bill and you read all of the different, I mean, it is not a health care plan. It is designed to weed out, really, the population. And I just sit back and I look at the reality of it. It's bankrupt to begin with. We don't have the money to support it. And
no, we don't.
And really, what has this administration been able to really accomplish? The only things that this administration has been able to accomplish is on a daily basis.
I know. He got a weekend away from the press while he could golf with Tiger Woods. That's what the administration did.
Well, what they did accomplish is spending and spending and spending and spending. And they continue to spend money that we don't have. They continue spending money we don't have. And I see that there are so many on a daily basis. First of all, I encourage people to look at the positives. What has this administration done for the country is every single time they threaten to take our arms, we go out and we buy more guns. We have more guns and more ammo than they even suspect that we have. We are poised for a position. And, you know, I just see that every single week, every single month, as it keeps going forward, the more that they threaten to take away from us, I just believe that at some point we're going to stand up and we're going to say, we're not going to take it anymore. And God love you, Texas. Because from Texas all the way up to North Dakota, as people on the other coast that don't have the arms, you know, they live in the very strong liberal states. It's very bleak and it's very discouraging for them. But you know, one of my strongest supporters is Texas. Being that I'm up in the oil fields in the Bakken, and I don't know if you know that's where I am, but Clint, that's where I'm at every day, is out talking to, and the majority of the guys are from the South, and you know, you are, you know, I would not want to cross someone from Texas because you don't like to lose. And you are absolutely right. We have to go after the local officials. That's the only ones that we can affect right now, because when you look at the anointed's track record, unfortunately, he has shoved through everything that he said he was going to do. I just do not see how the anointed health care plan will actually get implemented, because that is one of the, you know, it's one thing to pass a bill. It's another thing to actually fully implement it when there's not a dollar behind it, and when over 70% of the country didn't want it.
Well,
first,
you know,
you have to actually read the bill to understand what they're actually implementing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had to pass it first. You got to remember, they had to pass it first. We're on the air with Clint Stutz, who's talking about the Texas nullification of Obama Doesn't Care bill. The website that they have is texasnullification.org. Clint, go ahead, pick it up. Tell us a little bit more of the momentum and how you put this together.
And before, Clint, you take over, hang on 1 second, because James, as I said, and Clint, I'm sorry, but I'm out of town tonight. I'm down in Colorado doing some business things and haven't been able to have the regular show schedule. But James and Clint, you guys are going to take it from here. I have to bow out because of some other obligations. But, again, I'm honored to have you on. Clint, if you'd like to come on the show again, and please spread, tell everybody, tell all of your connections down there, you know, if you'd like to have an evening just to dedicate to talking. I mean, the more that we can get out there, the more that we can get people to understand and fully understand just what I don't even know the words to describe the most horrific, the most abominable bill that ever went through, unread, shoved it through, because it's really about voter base and so many other nefarious things that we can't even imagine an administration, and that's why so many people could not fathom that our own administration, our elected officials, would actually put something through that is this detrimental, this crippling. And the biggest thing, the first thing that it did was it halted our economic recovery, because before it even was passed, the big CEOs, CFOs in manufacturing, in our economy, they sat back and they said, I can't afford to spend any of my money, because they didn't know how much it was going to cost. Then when they started getting an idea of how much it cost, then the next thing that they had to do is they had to scale back and go below 30 hours to try and keep the cost at bay. Now, the next dangerous piece that's coming in, and enough people do not understand, but I come from manufacturing background. I spent 15 years in manufacturing back in Minneapolis. And I spent 15 years, first of all, in garages and machine shops. Then I went into food manufacturing, medical manufacturing, any type of manufacturing you could envision in Minneapolis. I had the whole territory, and I did temporary staffing. And I know that 90% of manufacturing has temporary employees in place to run their manufacturing floors, and in Chicago as well. Dangerously in Chicago, the wage is even lower, and below minimum wage. And first of all, raising minimum wage to $9 an hour is ludicrous. But anyways, the dangerous part about amnesty is that, first of all, manufacturing is halted because of the cost of the anointed's health care plan. And then when amnesty is passed, what that will force manufacturing to do is it's going to take the rest of our individuals that are making those good wages from anywhere from $10 upwards to $18, $20 an hour. It's going to displace those workers. Think about what happened when the illegal immigrants came in and took over construction, primarily the Hispanic culture. When they came in and they undercut, and I know this very, very well, majority of my friends back in Minneapolis were making the great wages until the illegal Hispanic culture came in, and it forced contractors to undercut, underbid, take that workforce, displace those workers. And guess what? When those contractors wanted to come back in, anywhere from cement to the construction, they had to come in and compete at those lower wages. Well, that's what's going to happen in manufacturing, because when amnesty is passed, now what's going to happen is those companies, if they want to stay here in the States instead of shipping and shoring offshore, which, trust me, I know they didn't want to do it, but I sat in those board meetings when anywhere from Turk to Cypress Semiconductor, Boston Scientific, 3M, I can go on and list the companies that had to offshore. Well, now the ones that stayed, in order for them to cover the cost of health care, they will displace those workers, and they will put those now legal to be illegal in those positions so they can make their bottom line. And now those people that lost their jobs, now think of what it's going to do to unemployment. This is at a time when unemployment is at a record high, and they're going to flood the workforce with illegals that are now legal that will take the lower wages. So now those young men and women, all of those men and women doing those jobs will have to come back, and if they want their jobs back, instead of making $18 an hour, now it's more like $8 an hour. At a time when the cost of living and hyperinflation is just around the corner. It's insanity, but it's a purposeful dismantling. And that's why, as I sit here every night, you know, tonight I'm sitting in my hotel room. Tomorrow night, I'll be back in either Studio A, which, Clint, I don't know if you've heard this, but my studio is many times in my three-quarter ton diesel pickup truck sitting outside my camper in the oil fields in Williston. Depending on how cold it is, though, then I end up in my camper because the diesel, the motor's a little too loud, and I don't want to talk over it. But I'm dedicated every night, and I'm relentless in my pursuit, and we're gaining momentum, and we're gaining ground, and we got one more listener tonight, and I will stop being so long-winded because I have to get out and fulfill my other commitments. But spread the word and spread the message. Get one more person to tune in because we're going for a larger audience. And, Clint, you're going to help us get there, and I'm honored again that you came on. And if you'd like to come on again, we'd love to have you. And I'm going to bow out, gentlemen, so take it from here. And we will be back on and I'll be back on tomorrow night because, James, real quick, give a plug for the guest that's on tomorrow night with Mendingo and I.
Alex Newman will be the guest, and he is an Agenda 21 expert from the New American, and I could go on and on and on. But tonight we're with Clint Stutz of TexasNullify.org. And, Clint, have all kinds of questions for you.
And I'm going to say goodnight from here, guys. Take it over. I see you got somebody in queue, and I'm going to say goodnight. God bless, and see you tomorrow night. And ciao from Bella. And thanks, you guys. And I'll talk to you later.
Night, Bella.
Bye.
Good night.
So, Clint, some of the areas of Obamacare it's going to affect is a sales tax, essentially, on property sales, any sort of capital gains. But in a state like Texas, I mean, that's going to be millions of dollars if they're able to put into effect. Is it going to stop? If your bill passes, what's going to happen to the real estate market? Is it going to be impacted here?
As far as the protection that a taxpayer would have, yes, it would affect our real estate market. And something to point out about our plan, I mean, at least as it was turned in to the Legislative Council, it was a voluntary thing. It didn't force, for example, if a Democrat in Texas wants to pay all his Obamacare taxes, he can go ahead and do so. We can't stop him. But anybody who does not want to pay any of their Obamacare taxes, whether it's the individual mandate or if it's that sales tax on the sale of a home, they can go through the Secretary of State's website and get protection that way and not have to pay that. So it would be an attractive thing in the Texas real estate market if a taxpayer could come here and, for example, if somebody from California, some big wig with, you know, a multi-million dollar bank account comes to Texas and wants to flip houses, he would want to flip houses in Texas before he would flip houses anywhere else, because we're interposing against that tax. And that tax is just something that adds to the price of that home. So that's going to impact that market that way. And there's other stuff that it would affect. I think the medical device manufacturing gets like a certain percentage of a tax, and we could interpose against, we're going to interpose against that.
Well, I'll tell you what else it's going to affect: education. Because currently, you know, all your student loans and Pell Grants and stuff is all being lumped underneath the control of Obamacare. In fact, my student loan was contacted the other day and was told, well, you've paid longer than X period of time. Once you reach this point, you can apply to have the rest of your loan voided. Well, who's going to finance an education if they know that they're not going to be able to collect on that loan unless it's paid within, I think, 10 or 12 years? So,
exactly.
You know, we're going to have to deal with this in this state, and you're going to have to deal with this in other states too, because you're not going to have educational systems that are going to be accepting, or you're not going to have institutions loaning money out knowing that they're not going to be able to collect after a certain period of time. We have a caller on the line. Would you like to take a call, Clint?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see.
Hello.
Hello, caller. You're live on the Bell D'Angelo Show.
Yes, my name is Stanley. I'm calling you all the way from New York. I'm a person that voted for Obama, so I do believe that he's doing something that should have been done a long time ago. Let's go back to history. No president, Republican or Democrat before him, did something with the health care, and that was an issue that should have been resolved a long time ago in my eyes, because we're really in disgrace when it comes to that. I want to ask
a question.
Yeah, I have a question to do with that. How can we have in the Constitution the right to live, but how can you have the right to live if you have no health care? That's one of our rights.
Not a right.
It should be a right.
Well, it sounds like you don't understand what rights are.
Well, you have a right to live, but you have no health care. So how could we function in a country like us that has the right to live but you have no health care?
Rights are handed down from God, okay? You have a right to breathe because God breathed life into you. He did not give you the right to health care because, let's face it, he doesn't offer a health care service. In fact, even who is one of the biggest complainants about Obamacare, it's the various churches, you know, being forced to adopt policies that go against their own beliefs. I mean, there is no right to health care. And as Ron Paul had said, at the point that you say you have a right to health care, then you have a right to force people to come in and provide services. You have a right to make people come in and clean the beds, and it goes on and on of all the supported services that you've just forced people to do at a non-competitive wage, because the government in its almighty wisdom says it's a right. Government doesn't hand down rights.
You had no problem when the insurance company are doing everything that you're saying, when Blue Cross Blue Shield is the CEO of Blue Shield Blue Cross is getting $1 billion, when a lot of insurance company, you call them back and you're saying, I've been working a long time, and you're sorry, sir, we can't do that operation, it's not covered. You have no problem with that. You have no problem with precondition that a lot of companies are doing. You have no problem that some
people...
I have
no problem whatsoever with the free market.
That's a problem. I'm sorry.
I really don't see that as a problem with the free market working. The problem is, and I think, Clint, you would probably agree or might want to chime in on this, is when the government interferes with free market, you actually end up at that point no longer having a free market. So then yes, insurance companies can exacerbate the issues. But let's face it. I mean, if the government was out of our healthcare system, the insurance companies, yes, they're going to try to make a profit, but you're going to have a choice of whether or not you choose to purchase this particular plan or this particular plan, or Lord forbid, maybe become self-funded and save your money in other ways, or you know, do some other creative ways to cover your medical costs. Clint?
Yeah, I think part of what people tend to gloss over is the fact that there are health insurance mandates, things that are required to go into a particular health care policy, and different states have different mandates. So, for example, Texas is actually a mandate-heavy state. There's a lot of mandates that go into our health insurance policies in Texas, and those mandates actually drive up the cost of your coverage. So you've got 65-year-old women that are having to pay coverage for, say, in vitro fertilization procedures in their policy, even though they're 65 years old and will have no use for it. And you've got multiple other mandates that have no application to the person being insured, but they're having to pay for that coverage. If we had a free market and we could actually build our own policy and say, I want to be covered for this, this, and this, but not this, we could tailor and bring down the cost of our own health care policies. But
you
what
know,
the
Clint,
caller was talking about – go ahead.
Clint, I saw this in Montana. Montana is essentially priced at unisex. So they pay some of the highest rates. So I have to offer – when I offer insurance to my employees, I had to offer everything. And when I say everything, it's got to include reproduction coverage. It's got to include coverage autism. You know, that alone, when they passed the law in Montana, that raised the rates up, I heard, somewhere in the neighborhood of 26% for the average individual insurance carrier. By the way, that last call was actually from Quebec. You know, the caller is calling from Quebec, a country that supports actually having socialized medicine. And I have been in a hospital in British Columbia, and having had insurance was rather interesting because I was not looking forward to being in their hospital. I had a gout attack many years ago, but the emergency room was packed, and I got rushed right in. And I asked the nurses, why am I getting to go beyond all these other people? And essentially, they said, because you're American, you have insurance. Well, that's not going to happen here. So, Clint, if people want to start something like this, you know, where can they find out more information on how they can pick up a bill and adapt it to their state?
As far as nullification is concerned?
Yes.
They could go to the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. They've got, you know, basically the boilerplate bills they could look at and use those as a starting point. As far as getting involved in your own legislature and getting involved in your own process in your state, most states do have a website for their legislatures. Texas happens to have a very good one. It's the Texas Legislature Online. I think that's the address. Hang on. Actually, it's capital.state.tx.us, and we have a very, very transparent Texas Legislature website, and you can look up bills, follow bills, you can watch committee testimony, you can watch House and Senate proceedings in video archives. I would just encourage people to get involved in their state government. It's my opinion that the federal government is completely lost. And if you don't believe that yet, just keep watching the news. We had this whole fiscal cliff thing going on, and I was only halfway paying attention during that time because I knew that they weren't going to do anything substantial, and of course they didn't. But they know that we have this fiscal cliff, we have this this debt problem, yet they don't do anything about it ever. and they're going nuts over this sequester of the, these sequester spending cuts, when really it's not spending cuts, it's growth, it's cuts in the growth of spending. So if you go from like a 23% increase down to a 16% increase, did you cut spending? No, you're still spending 16% more. So if people just don't get it that Washington is completely lost and they really don't know what they're doing, they need to get a clue. And I think nullification is the one answer that we can have to restore constitutional principles in this country, state by state. But that has to take place at your state legislature, and it has to take place through you and the grassroots. You have to get it started, get the movement going, get the chatter going. Call into radio shows and make a fuss about it.
And call your state legislators and let them know that you support them. You know, myself and Representative Derek Skies were often called the Nullification Brothers, though, you know, up in Montana, it seemed like every other word out of our mouth was nullification. The press started to vilify us over that. And, you know, Derek's going to be on next week. You know, nullification is, as you said, the purest form of implementing the 10th Amendment. Just like secession is nothing more than essentially how our country was formed. We decided one day we've had it. We're seceding from England. I mean, there's some technical differences, but essentially that was how America was formed. So when you want to sit here and say nullification's illegal, and that secession's illegal, well, I guess people deciding they've had enough from a tyrannical government is illegal, then we should probably become subjects of England again. And if you don't agree with that, then great. If you don't believe in the 10th Amendment, then you're in the wrong country.
Exactly.
Yeah, tie this back into our three-part segment that we're starting this week about the questions you're not supposed to ask in American history. We were talking earlier about the Founding Fathers and what they thought about immigration. And we were touching a little bit about Jefferson. Flint, did you know that Jefferson felt it was safer to wait patiently for natural increase of American population rather than to achieve such increase by mass immigration? Essentially,
I did not know that.
He literally said that in his notes to Virginia. And he was very much against any sort of mass immigration. There was several other founding fathers and supporters thereafter who literally wanted some sort of check and balance for those that were coming here. You know, we picked the founding fathers. Let's see, get back to my part three notes. It's a new section for me. So clearly, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson had lots of reservations about mass immigration and what it would bring to changes in the culture, beliefs, and the government model of the current society. They'd witnessed this in other countries and throughout history, and history repeats itself. Alexander Hamilton chimed in on this topic throughout the years, too. Hamilton took up the discussion of the American Indians and their immigration policy as the Indians extended nothing but friendship as the colonists arrived. But he went on to say that prudence requires us to trace the history further and ask what has become of the nation of savages who exercise this policy and who occupies the territory they once inhabited. He went on to say that the American Indians, in short, had a severe immigration policy. Now, that's politically correct, right?
Yeah.
For Hamilton, immigration policy was a matter of prudence and good sense. In the infancy of the country, with boundless waste to the people, it was politic to give a facility to naturalization. But our situation has changed. He literally witnessed that the population in just 10 years increased about a third due to immigration. And he really feared that if they did not control immigration, the country that he knew would no longer be. George Washington himself wrote to Adams in 1794, contending that the United States had no real reason to encourage immigration, quote, except of useful mechanics and some particular description of men or professions. So essentially, George Washington, who came here and was the original founding father of our country, believed that unless you could come and be a citizen of good standing, offered a service or trade or profession that we needed, we really didn't need you. Many more other of the founding fathers wrote similar thoughts regarding this immigration. Most favor the ability for someone to petition the United States to be accepted with open arms and coming in with a clean record or count. The reality is that our educational system has been hijacked to give us a different thought about immigration. And none saw the United States as it was engraved upon the Statue of Liberty. And that is, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. You know, so often I was taught, and I don't know about you, Clint, that was kind of a paraphrase, our immigration policy. But, you know, we really need to remember that even though this is upon the Statue of Liberty, the Statue of Liberty was a gift by the French. You know, it was not representation of our immigration policy at all.
Yeah.
So what does this really mean? If the founding fathers were not the welcoming fathers we'd all been taught in school, why? Well, I think we can kind of summarize this up with how we're witnessing the effects of the migration of people who practice the Muslim faith. And, the Muslims have overrun parts of Europe and Canada and the world, once welcomed them as taxpaying people in overtaxed countries. So countries like France, which were taxing and overtaxing their people based upon the number of children, well, the French just stopped having children. And they essentially opened up their immigration to the Muslims and people from other countries so they could build revenue. And what's happened is several countries have been forced to adopt Sharia law. Some have set aside their own religious roots as being less than the Muslim faith. You know, it doesn't take a blind man to see how immigration in our own country has placed the American culture second to that of the immigrant's lifestyle, chastising the native population as being, quote, politically incorrect. So with that, hopefully we can think about this. And next week we will be discussing in the 33-question section, did Martin Luther King support affirmative action? So now we're going to go back to our guest, Clint Stutz of the Texas Nullification of Obamacare Bill. Clint, so...
Yes, sir.
Why don't we talk a little bit about how to effectively form a group like you did? I mean, how did you use the tools out there to pull 14 very diverse-minded people together across a state that literally could be the size of multiple countries and I think would be something like the fifth largest country in the world? How'd you do it?
Well, of course, you know Deborah Medina and that she has what is called First Friday Dinner and Discussion at her house every first Friday of the month. So a pretty good portion of our people, the people that are active in the group, came from there. You were one of them, of course. And the rest of them, I think about half of the rest of them probably came from the organization that I was working with during the lead-up to the Texas Republican State Convention. And the rest of the folks that came on board besides them are people that they knew. So it's basically a networking type thing. Somebody knows somebody over here, and that person knows somebody over there, and they want to get involved. And it just kind of pulls together organically all by itself. It's really not something you can control as a person. of course, you might see more enthusiasm in the beginning, and then you'll finally get down to your core group that sticks around and wants to actually do all the heavy lifting. So really, it's just you end up with a handful of people that are gung ho for it and want to follow through all the way, and the rest of the folks are there that probably can't devote the time like you can, or actually I can't devote the time either. I'm just doing it anyway. I just put other things on the back burner. Like for example, I'm 7 months behind on bookkeeping, but that's no big deal, right? But you have a lot of people that. Yeah, people play supporting roles, They do the emails, they do the phone calls, stuff that doesn't take a whole lot of time they can do in just a few minutes. But you get
There's a lot of free tools out there. I mean, one of the things you did, you created a Facebook page that would attract people who wanted to be involved in this.
And that was actually Teresa Beckmeyer's doing. Back during Deborah's campaign for governor, I did a similar thing. I came up with a thing called Medina Media Warriors. And what it was, she wasn't polling. She wasn't showing up in the polls. Nobody was asking about her. Nobody was wondering who this Deborah Medina person was. So we formed a group on Facebook, and a bunch of us that were, volunteers for the campaign said, okay, we're going to call radio talk shows and say, hey, get Deborah Medina on the show. And the first target was Mark Davis out of Dallas on WBAP. And we targeted him for about a week. He said, okay, leave me alone. Quit calling. I'm going to get Deborah on the show. And once he had her on the show, other radio shows in Texas were lining up to get her on their show. So that's how that worked. And the funny thing is, I didn't think of doing it for this group myself. It was Teresa that said, hey, I'm going to make a Facebook group and get all our people organized in there. I was like, well, duh, why didn't I think of that? I've done this before. But, people like, see, Teresa is super, super organized. And I guess my brain was just still fried from all the stuff I had done prior to the nullification thing. So she just hit the ground running with this, and in no time at all, we got several hundred people in that group that signed up to get signatures on petitions, to spread the word, and all that good stuff. So, this thing is so organic, it just takes off all by itself.
And we also utilize other free tools that I just really kind of wanted to touch on. We had to find a way to communicate, and I'm sure other grassroots people that, regardless of the cause, want to, know about some of these things. We used what was the calling service that you used?
It's freeconferencecall.com, and you can have, I think, up to 99 people on your conference call, and it's still free. And you can also, during the call, press a couple of buttons and record the call, and it's archived for you in WAV format and MP3 format.
And so that way you can also share it, you can refer back to it. So people in your group that may not have been able to make the call but would like to know, what they missed, they can still be a part of that meeting.
Yes.
So really just utilizing a lot of free tools out there, we pulled a lot of people together that would have had no other way to really effectively meet regularly and go through, the bill in the manner they did.
And there's another thing. You've mentioned our website a couple of times, texasnullification.org. That was a creation of one of our volunteers named Greg Stessel. And he just, on his own initiative, said, hey, why don't we get a website built? And we were all on the call, and we were like, yeah, that's a good idea, Greg. Why don't you do that? And Greg is he's been very active in politics for many years, and his standpoint is that you have to educate people. And so you'll go to our website, and you'll see a lot of stuff that is education-oriented about nullification, because you're going to get people that visit the website that don't know anything about nullification. And he wants to make sure that when you go there and you see our website, you can find out everything you need to know about nullification. And see, Greg,
He's also got this other website called Smell the Freedom. Actually, let me type it in to make sure what it is. Yeah, smellthefreedom.org, and that is basically freedom for dummies. And I don't say that to be belittling, but people that have no idea what the Constitution means or what it's about or where it came from.
What do you mean,
kind of
like our
website.
Friend from Quebec?
Say again?
Kind of like our friend from Quebec that thought that it's a right.
Yeah, this guy really needs to visit smellthefreedom.org to learn what rights actually are to begin with. It was obvious that your caller did not know what a right was, didn't know the definition of a right. But Greg does stuff like this, and I'm a big believer in education as well, because dealing with politicians, and you know, we've got some good ones in Texas, but even the good ones can be ignorant on some of the more important issues.
You know,
talking to
you
some
are,
of the politicians. Go ahead.
You're so right there. I have another bill that Dwayne Stovall was working with me, and we would talk to these various senators and representatives, and God bless them. It was amazing how when you're explaining just simple concepts related to the Constitution, like how, you know, what the role of a senator is and how they were constitutionally appointed in their positions, and half the time, more than half, these people would look at you and say, really? You mean the people didn't just always vote for him? And it's like that on so much. I mean, and I mean no offense to any other legislators. You know, they do a lot of good work. They have a full plate. But and they can't be experts on everything. But, you know, it takes us as people to take the effort and educate them on that which they may not know. And I'm sure I've yet to meet a legislator ever who would say he knew everything. They just can't.
Now, just to give you an example of how bad it can be, even when you're talking to the most conservative state senator in Texas, I'm not going to give the name because I don't want to embarrass him, because this is really embarrassing. We were in the Capitol for I think it was January 8th when the session started, and I was with a guy named T.J. Fabby. He had run again. I was one of his campaign volunteers. You know, worked real hard for his campaign, and T.J. Fabby knew this state senator personally and was a really big fan of his because he's such a good conservative. So we said, well, let's take this bill to his office and see if we can get support in the Senate, and just kind of get that going before we even get the House thing going. So I said, okay, let's go do that. We'll have a talk with him. Well, he wasn't there. He was still in session, so we talked to his chief of staff and had a good conversation with him. But going out the door, we met the senator in the hallway, and TJ was like, oh, hey, and they had a big greeting and hugged each other because they're pretty good friends. And TJ says, I just want you to read our nullification bill. We'd really like to get your support. And the first words out of this senator's mouth was, well, you know, TJ, the word nullification isn't in the Constitution. Now, at that point, the astute observer would say the good senator doesn't know his basic constitutional principles, because the correct answer in response to that is, no, the word nullification is not in the Constitution, nor does it have to be, because, number one, the federal Constitution does not enumerate the powers of the states, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It enumerates the powers of the federal government. Now, if the states are not prohibited from doing nullification by the Constitution, that's one thing, and we are not prohibited from engaging in nullification, because it's not mentioned there in Article 1, Section 10, is it?
No, it's not. But, you know, Clint, it's kind of funny, is most of the people that sit here and want to really shy away from a bill that has nullification in it, and it doesn't even have to use that word, that's just the popular phrase of the day, or a bill that might deal with secession or conditions thereof, tends to be people that support the federalist concept, that the federal is the supreme government. And they really don't understand that the federal government was not an umbrella over all the states. The federal government was a light rope that we all held on to make us look bigger, in a sense, in the world. So we would fight together. We would share some common things that went through that rope. But at any time, any one of us could take our hand and just open our fingers and let that rope go. You know,
yeah.
That is the true power and limitation thereof. You know, you can tie someone up with a rope, and that's what's happening. But the reality is that rope was never supposed to be tied around any one person or state's hands, but to be there just as a support to keep us together.
Absolutely. And the sad thing is that the education, I mean, government schools are not going to give you an adequate introduction to the concept of liberty. You get a cursory knowledge of the Constitution. You know the three branches of the government. That's pretty much it. But you don't really understand liberty. You don't really understand the Constitution when you come out of high school or even college.
I remember my civics course. And you know what I remember it best about? We had this big book. It was the Constitution. It seemed like it was huge. But I remember far more is the blonde that sat next to me.
you're
right. We're all distracted.
Our education is so poor, and that translates into bad government, because people that get bad education, they end up in government, and they have so little knowledge, so little of what the required knowledge is. You know, it's sad that I have to go and educate my politicians on basic constitutional principles. It's sad that I have to do that, but I do, and I'm going to do it some more in the coming weeks and months. But education, I think, is one of the most important things that we can engage in with our politicians and the people around us. People just don't know some of these basic things that are essential for us to safeguard our liberties.
Well, the easiest way to steal someone's liberty is to ensure that they don't know their freedoms, don't know their history, that they are uneducated. And, you know, Clint, you might not be aware of this, but there is all kinds of great tools out there. And one that's about to come out is put together by Professor Thomas Woods. And he's actually putting together a program that would be used for homeschooling or anyone that wanted to educate themselves. And he was going to have a K through 12 grade, and maybe it might go beyond, and cover a wide variety of topics. And there was talk, don't hold me to this, but there was talk that he was going to offer the K through 5 completely free. Now, when you can actually get someone of like Tom's caliber and the related people that'll be working on this project with him to put down in a medium that people can access worldwide on their own, on their schedule, you can actually begin to start to educate people, or at least give them a choice of education that doesn't kill their pocketbook. And a lot of people choose not to homeschool because they feel, you know, well, I already am paying for a public education. But, you know, I really believe that if you're paying for an inferior product and you use it just because you're paying for it, well, I understand that we can't necessarily stop paying for it today, but why use an inferior product? I mean, you need to get the right product. And as a homeschool parent, I believe it's my responsibility to my children to ensure that they receive a true education.
Absolutely. And another part of the problem is some of the people that we look to as a quote-unquote educator in some of these principles and some of these subjects, sometimes they would lead us astray. And one of those people, unfortunately, when it comes to nullification, is David Barton. And if you don't know, David Barton is the go-to historian for Glenn Beck. And I used to watch Glenn Beck a lot, and I've quit listening to him and quit watching him a long time ago. I just hate anything on TV, basically. I don't listen to him anymore. But David, I mean, I thought he made some really good points on the Founding Fathers, and I enjoyed what he said. But in 2010, I think it was, he wrote a treatise against nullification, and it was absolutely god-awful, horrible. It was basically a mishmash of quotes from Madison saying that he didn't, supposedly didn't support nullification, that it was a bad thing. But what he was doing was he was taking Madison out of context. He was leaving a big chunk, a huge chunk, of Madison's writings on nullification out of the equation. And he was trying to make it look like these founding fathers did not support nullification. And furthermore, he made some erroneous conclusions about nullification in his treatise. And unfortunately, David Barton is actually a constitutional advisor to a lot of our, or at least a pretty good handful of our state representatives and state senators here in Texas. And when you've got someone like that advising these people, and then you have Joe Blow like me showing up saying, no, that guy's wrong, that just makes your hill that much more steeper to climb.
Well, you're right, and I think irregardless of who you listen to, even me, I've had people sit here as a state representative and just praise and kiss the ground I walk upon, and I have to turn around and say, you know, I'm not perfect. You know, I might have this concept down, but it's very easy to misinterpret or misunderstand things or perhaps just misapply. Just like when we were forming this bill idea together, and both
and
you and
we
I.
We were wrong, weren't we?
We were wrong. We were wrong. And in freedom, freedom is something that you need to always strive to understand the truth and strive to listen to others in trying to understand that truth. You know, it's our egos that tend to get in the way at times and distract us. So, well, I really want to thank you for coming on the show tonight, Glenn. Again, Clint's website is TexasNullification.org, or the Facebook site is Nullification of Obamacare.
Yeah, I think let me go to it right quick.
I have it listed.
Facebook.com/groups/NullifyObamacareTX.
Okay. So if you want to join the group, know more. And when do you hope that bill will end up being released out of the legislative committee, where I believe it is now, correct?
I'm actually hoping this week. And once that comes out, we'll be able to hit the ground running and really hit the publicity side of this. I would imagine when it comes out, it's going to, you know, gather its own publicity by itself, but we need to go ahead and kind of foment that some more, call into the radio talk shows, write letters to the newspapers and say, hey, look what's going on in Austin. We're doing this in Texas, and we're leading the nation on this issue. And it's our belief that, well, it could be... We had in the 2011 session a state sovereignty committee, and that was the obvious place for this to go this time around. But we don't have a state sovereignty committee this time. We have we've got a committee that's called Federalism and Something Else. So it's basically a committee that they've thrown two things into, two subject areas into. I would imagine it would fall into either federalism or one of the health care committees. It's kind of up in the air. So, but regardless, whenever it does come out of the Texas Legislative Council and has a bill number, it's going to be publicized quite heavily. And we're going to post it on the Facebook group. We're going to put it on our website. And we'll keep all the updates on there about its progress in the Texas Legislature this session.
Okay, and of course, I'm sure you'll be back on here if not just for a few minutes to talk about what people can do, and they can always, you know, come back to the website, belladeangelo.com, and there's links to Clint's sites and the various groups, and we will be keeping people apprised of this. Also, if you go to our website and sign up for the newsletter, you'll be kept apprised of not only this bill, but other bills of the various people we've had on this show. Hey, Clint, I'd like to thank you for coming on, and please keep me apprised, and I'm going to go ahead and start to wrap up the show, but thank you, Clint.
Thank you very much, James.
Have a good evening.
All right, bye-bye.
So that ends it for Clint. I'd like to thank him again. It was such an honor to have him on. You know, tomorrow evening we are going to have Agenda 21 essentially is the topic. And last week you might have heard Chad on his show bring up Agenda 21, and I called in knowing a little bit about it, and Bella has heard of it but really didn't know much about it. Well, I went out and polled a lot of people I knew and pulled some strings, and we're excited. We're going to have Alex Newman, who is kind of the guru of reporting on Agenda 21. In fact, tomorrow night's show is Agenda 21 Fact or Fiction with Alex Newman. Alex is Newman is a foreign correspondent with the New American Magazine, and he's also an educator and consultant, a journalist. He focuses on economics, politics, security, education, and global issues. And for those of you that don't know, Agenda 21 is very real. It's referring to the United Nations Agenda 21. And not to take any of his thunder away, but essentially it is the UN's way of dealing with population control and population limitation through economics and various other unsavory means. I believe he'll probably be talking a bit about how it's tied into global warming, the various kind of to throw it all in one movement, but in the various green movements. He's going to be linking it all, and I'm sure he may even take some questions. Alex has written, as I said earlier, the New American Magazine, which is put out by the John Birch Society, the World Net Daily, Swiss News Magazine, he's a correspondent currently there, the American Daily Herald, the Liberal Sentinel Media, Freedom Project Education. He's also a teacher and a designer of several of the courses there, and that is an online education system mostly intended for homeschoolers, which provides a very liberal arts education. We're not referring to liberalism. We're referring to liberal education in the older sense, well-roundedness. If you go to our website, there's a bunch of links to various stuff that he's written. I would invite you to go and peruse those so you know a little bit more, and I'm sure Chad is going to have a great evening with him. Next week, we are going to have Representative Derek Skies, who served with me in the Montana legislature. He also recently ran for Montana State Auditor and gave the good old college try, so to speak, but did not make it. And he's going to be coming on and talking about some of the effects of water rights and some of the issues going on in Montana and the surrounding states with water. And I'm sure there'll be some discussion about how the EPA links in with that. Tomorrow night, Bella will be back in the chair, back with her with her computer and in her home and her oil man. And I think just about every one of us look at oil as being a gift from God. It comes from the ground, and it affects all of us and all of our life. So I must say, on behalf of Bella, we love our oil man. We love our oil. And it is so much of why American freedom exists. You know, it is that spirit of looking into tomorrow and putting dreams of tomorrow through you know, the natural God-given resources we have. You know, so often we mention this, but I think it needs to be said on every single show. The oil that comes out of the ground affects every single one of us. You get away from your gasoline-powered cars, you know what? Everything else in your house, from the electricity being produced, it's either coming from coal that's being produced in plants that's filled with plastic and other things that that come from petroleum-based products, down to the light switches, which is covered by a plastic plate which has petroleum in it. You know, we can't get away from oil. And I don't think that we want to. I mean, we'd love to have other alternatives in life, as anyone would, but you know, our prosperity in this country is based in oil, and we need to stay true to it. So thank you all of our oilmen throughout the North Dakota, Montana, Bakken region, and everywhere else in this country. You know, in future shows, we are going to be continuing to take calls. We got a call today from Sammy. I'm sure he's listening, and you know, I appreciate his call, even though I personally disagreed with his point of view. We're not here to silence people and only tell one side, but you know, I also invite people to clearly understand what it is they're asking. And when you want to discuss rights, then you better understand what a right is. You can't just make up your phrase. So, Sammy, hopefully we hear from you again, and you know, do some education, please. You know, really, the reality is, you know, we could say that there's R's and D's, there's right and left, but there's so little that actually divides us. We all come down to one thing, and that's love, love of our maker, love of our country, and that's why we're here. So on behalf of Bella and the crew, please go to the website, and good night.
Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-changey stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.